I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Pate the Pee is brought to you by Magic Spoon. Now, I go to the gym every day to clear my mind, to just get focused. I'm not responsible for anything in the gym but me. I don't have to be a leader or smart. But it has also made me think about my body differently. I think about what I consume in a way that I just wasn't paying attention to before. And some of the old things that I loved just weren't the best for me anymore. And cereal is one of those things. I used to love cereal. I ate cereal for every meal when I was growing up. It just was an easy snack and it was an easy meal if I needed one. But that's what I love about Magic Spoon, because now as an adult, I'm like, who knew that there's a high-protein, zero-sugar cereal? Y'all, Magic Spoon makes it. They also make treats and high-protein granola. It is just amazing. I knew nothing about protein before I started in the gym. Honestly, I learned a lot from Instagram and from other people. But the idea of eating your body weight or close to your body weight in protein, I'm like, how can I do it and it tastes good? And that's where Magic Spoon comes in. Now, the cereal, self-explanatory. Go get the cereal. Comes in a lot of flavors. Big fan, zero sugar, high protein. But the treats are relatively new, or newer than the cereal. And the treats are crispy, crunchy, and airy. And they have 12 grams of protein that you can just eat on the go. And the flavors are great, like marshmallow, chocolate, peanut butter, dark chocolate, and then the new granola. The granola packs in 13 grams of protein and zero added sugars. And the granola also comes in flavors like dark chocolate, almond, honey almond, and peanut butter. You can get $5 off your next order at magicspoon.com/people or look for Magic Spoon on Amazon or your nearest grocery store. That's magicspoon.com/people for $5 off. Hey, this is DeRay, and welcome to Pod Save the People. In this episode, it's me, Miles, and Sharonda back to talk about the news with regard to race, justice, and equity that you might have missed in the past week. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Pod Save the People. Here we go. Donald Trump says he can end every war with one phone call, but he just fired the four-person team actually trained to resolve global conflicts. Last week in the What a Day newsletter, the team dug into the exclusive story of the State Department's quietly dismantled peace negotiations unit, what they were working on, hint, Syria, Ukraine, and more, and why gutting them could blow back big time. The What a Day newsletter also featured exclusive one-on-one interviews with everyone from Columbia student activist Mahmoud Khalil to California Senator Adam Schiff and more. Subscribe for more inside scoops and get the full story at crooked.com/daily. I have no more ways to say that the world is just moving too quick, but here we are. This is DeRay at DeRay on Twitter.
This is Miles at Feral Rapture on Instagram and at Moon Pulpit on Twitter.
And I'm Sharonda Bossier at Bossier Shay on Instagram and at Bossier S on Spill.
Well, this week had a lot of things going on. George Santos, let me just start there. Now, George Santos was a character, definitely committed fraud, scammer, got sentenced to 7 years. And it just made me think of, like, it's just a reminder of how arbitrary sentences are. Mm-hmm. You're like, where does 7 come from? You're like, and there should be a consequence for him. I don't really know what prisons, like, I'm not even like a George Santos fan. And I'm sort of like, 7 years in prison just feels sort of, I don't know, ridiculous. And he should never be able to run for office or do any of those things again. And even his tweet about it was just a caricature of everything. I don't know, but I forgot all about George Santos. I forgot that we were still prosecuting him.
Yeah, I will say that tweet actually might make me a fan. I love a good scammer. I'm so sorry. I do. And I know that he was in Congress and like, that's a problem. And, you know, to your point, DeRay, he should never be able to run for elected office again. In one of my other group chats, we have a bet going to see how long he actually serves in prison. Right now, the low end is 18 months. The high end is 3 years. And so we'll see what that 7 years actually nets out to be.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that law breakdown, because that makes more sense to me. That makes a lot more sense to me. Do y'all remember Joanne the Scammer?
Yes.
And stuff.
The legend.
Yeah. And I think about like Anna Delvey. And I'll be honest with you, I have a thick disgust with American culture right now. And the idea that those kind of... the Joanne the Scammer, the Anna Delvey, those kind of caricatures of like scamming have found their ways into politics and have done real violences and have done real frauds and have really, because, you know, George Santos totally mutated himself as an enemy of trans people, of Black people, in order to get money. And sure, he can sit down with Z-Way and it be seen as funny and he can put these letters out, but he did a real violence. And I always think that that is what I'm noticing is American culture. So yes, Trump is a clown, but the clown has a machine gun.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about George Santos. So I'm like, as long as he could be in jail, keep 10, lock him up. Sorry, Angela.
Oh, God. Wow.
So sorry, much Angela. For the abolitionist anti-carceral right. position
that
of this
pod. Negroes. Abolition with Negroes first.
Oh, he said, throw George Santos away. What a rise and fall, though, because George had a run. It
incredible
was a good
run.
Run.
It was, yeah.
And was actually in Congress. That's the wild part about it.
Yes.
Now, I guess I'm going to volley this over to you all because I don't watch South Park. I saw a clip of the spoof of Donald Trump. And I am sure that if the network had actually seen this, they probably would have yanked that off the air before it ever aired. And I think Trump replied, didn't he? Didn't Trump say something in response to
it? Yeah, the White House issued a statement, called it a fourth-rate show, said it hasn't been relevant in 20 years. Yeah.
Fourth-rate is funny.
Can y'all talk about what it is, though? You all know the South Park thing better than I do.
Yeah, so I was a big South Park fan in high school. And anyway, so, you know, South Park is known for its parodies of like popular culture and politics. This particular segment or skit pokes fun at Paramount for its decision to settle, and CBS, right, and everyone else who has sort of settled with the Trump administration. And, you know, the townspeople think they've gotten a good deal because it's like, okay, we can make some cuts and like meet his demands for money. And then they're like, ooh, but it's not just money, right? We also have to like now do the pro-Trump messaging, which, as you know, is something he's also been able to secure in some of his other settlements, deals, et cetera. And so, you know, South Park is like, how the hell are we, South Park, going to do pro-Trump messaging? Got it. And so there's this like, you know, there's this video, it cuts from being animated to being sort of live action, right? Of Trump in the desert. They're using all of this language that's really about Jesus. And if you have seen any of the like, He Gets Us, you guys remember those like a couple years ago from the Super Bowl ads, like He Gets Us Jesus ads. So they pull from that imagery, pull from that typeface, et cetera. And then they hit Trump where, you know, they think he will feel it most, which is a discussion about him having a tiny penis and having a sort of tiny animated penis as part of this. However you feel about that, that's the route that they chose to go. I thought it was very keeping in the style of South Park. So if like that's your jam, that's your jam. I think it's also one way to say like, come at us, bro. You know, they've also, the creators of South Park just secured a massive deal. Right. And so I think they probably feel a little bit insulated from a lot of the financial pressures that other creators and creatives might feel right now. And I thought it was one way to leverage their platform in a way that was true to their voice to kind of say F off to the Trump administration. So that's the South Park thing. It's getting a lot of shares, obviously, and a lot of views.
of course, like South Park was so big in my childhood because I'm very young, so that was my childhood. but no, it was so big, but it always was kind of like white boy humor just growing up in rural suburban Georgia. And of course, like since then, I don't see it like that anymore. I mean, many of people who love South Park who are not white boys, but that's how I always took it. But it's twofold, right? One part is I'm American. So there is something extremely cathartic about watching an animated series totally take down and challenge the power of somebody who is so cruel and do it in vulgar ways, do it in ways that are mean and kind of gross. That's like kind of that American thing. The other part of me, the second part of the fold, is oh, I'm Black and I'm trans and I know the limits of cruelty against cruelty. So I know the limits of talking about somebody's body part or in saying something. You know, I kind of like deconstructed that when I was integrating trans men in my life and integrating so many different people into my life who were saying, you know, tiny dick jokes only work if you think that the only people who exist are cis heterosexual people. they become a reaffirming act of a transphobic reality for everybody else as well. And then even when I was thinking about the scene with him with the devil and all that being so queer coded and how that just reestablishes this kind of domination culture that says queerness is evil. So it was this kind of contradictory moment of me experiencing a lot of catharsis by viewing it, but also understanding that, oh yeah, white cruelty is not going to eliminate white cruelty.
Yeah, the point of like the sort of the queer codedness, right, I think is also, you know, them saying y'all are so homophobic, yet y'all are gay for Trump. You know, feels like the way that people express their undying devotion to him is as if they are like literally in love with them. And I understand, to your point, Miles, some of the like, I don't know, the paradox of like both getting that and like and wanting to see that, and then also understanding the limits of it and what it means for how far we still have to go. You know, as someone who also sometimes dates men, always a mistake, I shouldn't say that, but anyway, as someone who sometimes dates men, and straight men in particular, right? Like for a lot of them, still in 2025, being called gay is still one of the worst things, right, that could ever happen to them. And so I don't love that, but I also think that there is an element of trying to meet Trump and his supporters where they are, you know?
I love what you just said too, because there is so much homoeroticism in homophobia. Even when, yes, I think about what happens in like my high school years or middle school years, that homoeroticism and homophobia, they're not separate. You know, I forget the scholar who said it, but I'm sure somebody will tell me. But it's disgust and desire do not live on opposite ends. They live right underneath each other with each other. Yeah. So there's something there too, to me.
And then I saw Candace Owens back in the news. Candace, why? Why are we even talking with Candace Owens? Why is the president of France suing Candace Owens for defamation? And why is Candace Owens doubling down on saying that the first lady of France is a man? What are we doing? What is the world coming to? I thought it was a joke that the president of France is suing Candace Owens. Like, what?
Yeah. I don't understand why they feel the need to litigate this. You know what I'm saying? Except for, connected to the point we were just making, there's a little bit of transphobia here, right? Which is the, like, I will prove to you. Because, like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Except for, they must feel like one of the worst things ever would be to be a trans woman. You know what I mean? But I was surprised because I didn't think that Candace Owens packed that kind of cultural punch. That they even felt the need to dignify it by acknowledging it, responding, and...
It's so, like, the news is so strange because it's always two layers, right? The first layer is, of course, Candace Owens chasing somebody because she thinks that that person is trans is disgusting and wrong. And you want to defend that person and you want to say, no woman deserves this, which is still true. And then you research who she's critiquing and you're like, you met your husband at how old? Like, did you know that she was a high school teacher when she met her husband? She was 39 and he was 15?
Ooh, I did not know.
I can't remember if I said this on the podcast or if I just said this in the group chat, but it kind of always puts us in a situation of kind of reaffirming that disgusting liberal thing because it's like, how do you defend somebody who is so, who has done things that are so kind of like weird and heinous? And if you do defend that person because in this way they're being dominated, it looks like you're affirming all their choices in life. And it's such a weird, sticky thing that I'm like, you know what? My black ass, I'm just going to say have hands off and just say that's your karma. Maybe Candace is on your ass for other reasons, but I'm not going to touch it because it feels untouchable because there's something so gross about that relationship to begin with to me.
I had zero clue that that is how they met.
Me either. Y'all put it in this. Y'all had to do my research. I was like, what's going on? before I holler at her.
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned. There's more to come. Pod Save the People is brought to you by Amnesty International USA. Did you know that Amnesty International USA has been defending human rights for over 60 years? They do it without taking a single dollar from governments to fund their campaigning and research. Why? Because they believe in holding power accountable, not getting cozy with it. Right now, they're pushing back against Trump's mass deportation campaign. It's a cruel campaign. And Trump is violating human rights like due process and the ability to seek asylum, and it's literally tearing families apart. Amnesty does the research, makes the calls, organizes the grassroots, and they rely on support from people like us to make it happen. So if you believe in truth, accountability, and not letting Trump-style cruelty slide, head to amnestyusa.org/help. Your donation is tax-deductible, and right now it'll be triple matched. That's amnestyusa.org/help. But then there's all this other stuff also happening in the culture that is just... like, what's going on? So, Miles, lead us through the culture stuff, because I feel like I've missed this week.
Oh, Jesus. My managers, plural, feel like I missed this week, too, because I think I was doing... I have my iPad and my laptop, and I was doing more iPadding than laptopping on some of these days. So, the first thing that has had my algorithm in disarray is Laverne Cox got up. Now, first of all, because I love a compliment sandwich, she looked sickening, over, beautiful, great bob, Mugler collection in the back. And I thought she was going to tell us something profound, maybe funny. But instead, she tells us that 4 years ago, she dated a white MAGA NYPD cop who is 26 years old. If you do not know, because Laverne Cox does look like she's 20, Laverne Cox is currently, I believe, 51 or 52. So at that time, she was like 48, excuse me. So at the time, she was like 48. And right now, currently, she's in her early 50s. So this is not a young Pollyanna who just was trying to see if love could just be love. It totally stormed the internet. People had so many things to say. And of course, I just want to know, before I give my opinion, what do y'all think? What do you think? Well, how do you feel?
I was talking about this with one of my friends, and they were like, DeRay, that video was not for us. Laverne was courting a different audience, and they were not black. And I think that I've never seen somebody misread the room so dramatically twice. So like the first video was just like, nobody would have been, people would have taken a white partner as like, that's just Hollywood. It is what it is. Like whatever. But it was like the fawning over the blue eyes. Da-da. It was the MAGA. It was the like 3 years of it all. You're like, the MAGA people don't even think you should exist. It's not even like a passive sort of, I don't know. It's the MAGA people are like, we want the word trans deleted. You know, it's like, this is intense. So like that was intense. And then she posted the video of the like the justification for why people don't date black people. And you're like, Laverne. And if it was just, you know, the basic, not, you know, more black women are in college than men are, I don't know. Something that was like just a little more cut and dry, but it's like one section of that video is literally called the talented 10th. And you're like, yes. Well, what? And it's like, you're like, okay, well, this sort of went in a whole different direction to sort of provide cover for not dating black people. You're like, this just got really out of control. And what I think is hard for Laverne, and I'll be, you know, we haven't talked about this. I think that the black people are like, okay, no. The black people who are like normally allies are like, well, this is too weird to defend. I saw a ton of trans Black people also be like, either I'm off the train or I'm just going to like sit this one out because we generally like you, Laverne, and we're just going to consider this like a moment that you lost your mind. So we're just going to... And then it's like the Black people who were like, and like wanted a reason to be transphobic are like, they're like, whew, got my moment.
T-slur, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and the white people aren't going to really rock with a Black person that Black people don't rock with in this way.
Exactly.
So like, I don't know where Laverne goes from this, and I don't know how you clean this one up. I don't know. This feels like an epic mistake, and what happens when people live in Hollywood for too long and they think that that is the world, and you're like, oh, baby, the world, and you, who are your friends?
Yes.
And DeRay, sorry, Sharonda, but no. to DeRay's point, so I don't forget, to that point, Laverne is in New York City, right, most of the time. That's where mm-hmm. she lives. So it shows you that Hollywood is a state of mind, not a location.
Yes, yes. Well, if you buy tickets to her show, she'll answer all of your questions.
Somebody was like, cancel the show, baby.
I see what
cancel
you did.
The show.
There was a capitalist critique in that. Okay.
I think the last thing that I will add, because I think both of you sort of summed it up pretty well, is that it was also so clear to me how much this was about her feeling chosen by someone that she thinks other people would want to choose, right? So she's like, this was a white man with blonde hair and blue eyes, which for a lot of people is like, those are desirable characteristics, right? That's who is supposed to be the most attractive in our culture. And she's like, this person who is supposed to be the most attractive in our culture wanted me. And I think that there is something in there about like the race and desirability part that is shining through so clearly for me, where I'm like, you are worthy and you are beautiful and people are attracted to you and you don't need, it just feels like when she was a young girl, she fell in love with some white blonde hair, blue-eyed boy on her TV screen, and that was what she was chasing, and she was going to get it at any cost. And I think we're seeing that the cost is probably going to be pretty high to her, unfortunately.
Overall, Mother Pecola Brie love, like mm-hmm. that's what it's giving. I don't want to dogpile on Laverne Cox because I do really, really like her, but I would not be me if I didn't say some of my thoughts, because it's interesting. I fell in love with Laverne because she was doing this tour with Bell Hooks. And she talks very clearly and lucidly around the imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist patriarchy. So there's maybe an expectation that I had of her that she kind of failed. But then also, I was just thinking about how sometimes I'll agitate some of my white gay friends. Who am I kidding? My one white gay friend. I'll be agitating my one white gay friend about Love is Love and how BS that is, because overall, I think all these kind of like neoliberal slogans just have their limits. But I will always tell him, I will be like, well, you know, love can't really be love until freedom is freedom. So all these different things that you want your love to transcend can't really happen if you're on a land that is still festering hate and festering domination. And it was weird to see somebody who you think is so learned in Black feminism not understand that I get in your intimate subjective reality, you might be experiencing romance and all types of good sex and all types of things, but the political global reality is that this is a man who would rather have you dead. And he does that through his political actions. And those things have to be married with each other. And it's really difficult to make coherent your moral, ethical, political, and public ambition values all be coherent. But, you know, at 48, I would hope that you were closer. I would hope that you were closer. It's not even like a big homophobic rapper. It's just him.
The other thing I think about Laverne that is really hard, and that this is sort of about the archetype of Laverne, less Laverne the person, is that, you know, the way Hollywood hurts you is quiet. So it'll be just no invites. The people with power won't issue statements about Laverne. They won't comment on Instagram about Laverne. She just will be nowhere all of a sudden. It won't be a red carpet. It won't be an awards ceremony. It won't be an interview. They will be like, this is just too much to have to deal with on our platforms. And that is how careers end, because, you know, Laverne is frankly, like, in some ways, like a legacy celebrity. Like the show, I never watched Orange is the New Black, But that is sort of when Laverne becomes sort of a big deal. And that show, you know.
Time Magazine.
I don't know what Time Magazine.
It's her Time Magazine cover.
Oh, I missed that. I know her from Orange Is New Black, like from that moment of celebrity. But like then, you know, COVID happened and it feels like we went through 80 years. So she's famous because of that one. I mean, she's had a lot of other things, but that is what made her like singularly famous. And it's like, you know, you need to ride, like, you are still here because of the good graces of people's memory. That is sort of, you know, the world's moving real quick. And we all saw this. I don't know. This makes me nervous for Laverne. And I don't know if the City Winery show is going to be the...
Oh, it just eats your mind. Like, that what you just said earlier about Hollywood was so good. I think it just has to eat your mind.
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned, there's more to come. Pod Save the People is brought to you by Strawberry.me. We spend, about a third of our waking hours working? And yet so many people feel stuck in jobs they've outgrown or jobs they never really wanted in the first place. And let me tell you, I've worked in HR for a long time. I've heard it all. What if the next move is even worse? I've already put in years in this place. I can't afford to make a wrong step. Who am I without this title? Isn't everything kind of miserable anywhere you work? And look, I get it. The feelings are real, but they're also why so many people stay stuck. And that's where today's sponsor, Strawberry.me, comes in. They connect you with a certified career coach who helps you go from where you are to where you actually want to be. Whether you're looking for a change, feeling stuck, facing a big decision, or just seeking professional growth, it's like therapy for your career. A coach helps you cut through the noise, define your next move, and turn vague goals into a real-world plan with the kind of accountability that keeps you moving forward. Their coaches are thoroughly vetted and assessed for their qualifications and expertise and come from a wide range of backgrounds, experiences, and specializations. Don't leave your career to chance. Take action. Own your future with the coach in your corner. Go to strawberry.me/PSTP to claim your $50 credit and get started. That's strawberry.me/PSTP. Stop settling. Start building the career you actually want.
So kind of, for lack of better words, transitioning into a more solemn subject, Malcolm Jamal Warner passed away, and I saw so many people on the internet totally just kind of open their hearts and talk about their experiences with him. I follow some like professionals in the entertainment industry who talk about their personal experiences, but also just people talking about who he was as far as him in his acting roles and his choices. And it was so interesting to look at his interviews and see that he was so deliberate about picking roles and doing things inside of the Black community that were... that will be received well and that had integrity and dignity, and how sometimes that didn't always pay the best. And sometimes that meant there were some sacrifices. And, you know, life comes at you really, really fast. Death even faster. And we just are losing our legends, you know? I think, like, when you think about it in the context of Frankie Beverly and Maze, in the context of Quincy Jones and Nikki Giovanni, I think Black people through culture are mourning and grieving a certain type of star and a certain type of celebrity who is willing to not collude with minstrelsy in order to perpetuate their fame. And I think that grief, as well as him as a person, but that grief is thick for us too. How do y'all feel?
Yeah, I think it was a tough loss. And, you know, whenever I tell the story of like why I decided to go to college, Felicia Rashad's portrayal of Claire Huxtable was like, in my head, right? Like I was like, she's a lawyer, I'm going to be a lawyer, right? Like that was, and so the Cosby show, and I understand the dark cloud, around it now, given all that we know about Bill Cosby, but really was a depiction of Blackness, Black life, et cetera. And I know lots of us have class critiques, et cetera. But what I heard from Black men was that even if they couldn't relate to the family unit in which Theo was being raised, they could relate to Theo as a kid who struggled with dyslexia, as a kid who was a little awkward, who was trying to figure out dating. Like, it still felt like an authentic portrayal and depiction of Black boyhood to them, right? I'll say the first thing that came to mind, unfortunately, when I saw the headline and before some of the additional details had been shared, was I had worried that it had been something like some health thing that he hadn't tended to, et cetera, because there have been so many Black men in my circle and extended circles that were dying in their early to mid 50s because they had avoided like the necessary health checkups, or they, you know, weren't being honest about how depressed they were, et cetera, et cetera. And so it made me check on the Black men in my life again, just to be like, you good over there?
You're just so young. You're like, oh,
I know,
you were
54.
Young, you know, and just so sad, like that a drowning accident on vacation. You just got married. You got married late in your life to you.
Yeah.
Had a kid late in your life. And thankfully, they were able to rescue the kid. And, you know, I don't know if you saw, but they said they performed CPR on him for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And he just like didn't make it. And you're like, whew, this is very sad. And you know how the currents, you know, they say he got caught in the current. That's like the scary thing about the water is that
it's unpredictable.
It's so unpredictable. And you like think you get it. I remember I went white water rafting at Bowdoin. Baby, I fell out that raft and was like, oh, this is nothing. Shout out to Brian Wedge, who saved my life. But I was like, this life jacket don't even matter. It don't matter.
It
like the current was whipping me around. I was like, that was my first taste of like the water is stronger than anything I saw on TV. And this life jacket is just keeping me like upright for a moment, but it is not going to save my life.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I have to disagree with you, DeRay. I never get in water and think I know what's going on. I always picture myself in the Lord's hands when I'm in the water. I was like, oh, surrender. And then we also had some other folks pass away. Interesting, culturally, Hulk Hogan passed away. From my feed, I have a very African-American feed, Black American feed. It is not a kind place to him right now. So if you're a fan, you probably are a little offended. And then we also have Ozzy Osbourne, who passed away as well, who my fifth grade teacher put me onto Ozzy Osbourne Crazy Train. And I remember I got to paint my nails black. And anywho, Ozzy Osbourne just has a very significant place in my fifth grade life. And he was kind of integrating himself back into the world through the Osbourne show and stuff. So how do y'all feel about this moment of certain these kind of like certain like white masculine icons passing away? Because I think that still affects us too. I think that affects not just Black people, but American culture when these type of icons of white masculinity pass as well. How do y'all feel?
I saw even the white people I know not being kind to Hulk Hogan. They taught me the phrase, rest in piss this week. So, you know, I was like, oh, look at me learning things in white people's comment sections. It doesn't seem like many people were fans of Hogan's, especially I think toward the end of his life when he was a pretty vocal Trump supporter, married a woman young enough to be his daughter. I think he just did a lot of things that people were like, all right, we're off that train. Ozzy, I don't know anything about Ozzy's music. I actually first encountered Ozzy Osbourne when they were doing the reality show, The Osbournes. It was like one of the first reality shows that I watched. And, you know, remember the kids and remember Sharon, et cetera. And so that's really my only point of reference for Ozzy Osbourne.
Not the bat?
I know he bit the head off the bat and all that other stuff, right? Because that's like stuff that came up in conversation. But like culturally to me, he's a reality TV star and not a musician.
Same Sharonda.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, you know, he's seen.
And the kids. We learned the kids. We learned him. We learned Sharon. We need a whole little family. They were the first British family that I ever knew.
Exactly. Yeah. And didn't Sharon get in trouble for saying something racist when she was on TV or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
But way after the show. That was more recent.
Oh, way after the show. Okay.
Well, and Hulk Hogan was racist in those, you know, if you remember, Hulk Hogan's racism. I feel like I didn't get to say that. And
you need to say it on the record.
Breaking news in case y'all didn't hear it.
We got to litigate this.
Hulk Hogan was racist. But remember that Hulk Hogan's racism was the end of Gawker.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Gawker released that audio of Hulk Hogan's tape where he uses the N-word and says all these other racist things. And that led to the Gawker lawsuits that then led to the end of Gawker. You know, somebody was like, they should just turn on Gawker's website one last time to do like a rest in peace Hulk Hogan. And I was like, you know, that would be very on brand for Gawker.
It would be. Somebody fund that. My news this week is about the attempt of the interim U.S. attorney for the Central District of California to pin felony charges on protesters, folks who were protesting in L.A. last month. So Bilal Essayali, who goes by Bill, that's a whole other story, currently serves as the U.S. attorney for the Central District of California. To give y'all a sense of the size of the district, it's headquartered here in Los Angeles. It includes 7 counties and nearly 20 million residents. So it's the largest federal judicial district outside of Washington, D.C. He's serving in an interim capacity because his appointment was made under federal law that allows for the attorney general, in this case, Pam Bondi, to fill vacancies without Senate confirmation for up to 120 days. He was appointed in early April. And so his interim term will wrap up at the end of August. And so he's got to prove himself in order to get Senate confirmation. If he's not confirmed by the Senate by then a panel of federal judges will have the opportunity to appoint him or someone else to the position. He doesn't currently have the support of either of California's senators, and it's not clear just yet if like this judicial bench will appoint him. And so the other thing to know is that the Trump administration has tried to have 2 other interim U.S. attorneys appointed by judicial panels, and both in New Jersey and in New York, those panels declined to do that. So just know that I think the administration is a little bit nervous. This is important context as we start to talk about what he has done here in Los Angeles. So he has filed felony charges against at least 38 people for alleged misconduct that took place during last month's protests or near the site of immigration raids. Many of those charges, though, have been dismissed or reduced to misdemeanors. So he has secured only 7 indictments, with 3 other cases resolved via plea deal. 5 of those cases have been dismissed with prejudice, and so they could be filed again. And again, many of the prosecutors in his office are struggling to get past the grand jury phase. And as you know, grand juries only need to find probable cause that a crime has been committed in order to move forward. And that is a much lower standard than beyond a reasonable doubt, which is required for a criminal conviction. The prosecutors in his office, on the condition of anonymity, are also speaking out, and they're expressing concerns over the allegations that federal agents are making. So, for instance, a U.S. Border Patrol officer claimed that a man was screaming in his face that he was going to shoot him. He claims that they chased the man, that they got stopped, etc. And that man's lawyer said, "I found video that shows that no such chase ever took place." There was another woman who was detained. She's 4'11". ICE agents detain her. She thinks she's being abducted. She holds up her work bag to shield herself. And the ICE agents claim that she struck one of them in the head and in the chest. And when her lawyer said, "Okay, then run me the receipts, show me the body cam footage and the eyewitness testimony that you all are relying on," magically the prosecutor dismissed the case. And so one of the prosecutors has also said that there are, quote, "a lot of hot-headed Customs and Border Protection officers who are kind of arresting first and asking questions later. We're finding that there's not probable cause to support it." So there are 3 reasons I wanted to bring this story to the pod. One is I think it's illustrative of what these people will do in order to curry favor with the current Republican leadership in hopes of like securing permanent appointments. 2, you know, the lies that these law enforcement officers will tell about protesters. And it made me think of being in Baton Rouge with you, DeRay, right, when you were arrested. And then lastly, you know, I don't know how we talk to people about not taking plea deals if they don't have to take plea deals, right? Like, have a lawyer fight the case and make law enforcement prove their case. But yeah, those are the 3 things that I wanted to bring to the pod for discussion. Sorry for all the context, but I think it's important for people to understand who's in this role, how they get there permanently, what they're willing to do to try and demonstrate that they're going to go hard in service of this administration's priorities.
Shout out to juries. Ask for a jury trial. Make these people fight tooth and nail. Boom. That's it. That's my whole story on this. The system only works because everybody pleads guilty or they take plea deals. Like, that is how it works. If y'all went to trial, you'd have a much better shot at a lot of things than, and, you know, there's some other people we know that just went to trial and got off on things that you were like, I think you probably did that. But convincing 12 strangers is a little harder than you think, especially in this moment where people realize the Trump people are crazy. Like, they got, you know, the briefs and stuff that Trump's lawyers are filing in court don't make sense. So try convincing 12 people to get it unanimously is a thing. So go to jury duty, y'all. My friend in D.C. just went to jury duty. He was the only Black person in the jury selection pool. He was like, this is bad. Yes, that is bad. Y'all need to go to jury duty. Go to jury duty.
Go to jury duty and be square. I always put on my good conservative Candace Owens drag if I get called. So hopefully I can get picked, because I know if they see me in my and how I look in the wild, they're gonna be like, not you. Not you, girl. Not you, girl.
My Candace Owens drag.
Right. Yes, yeah, so I gotta look all buttoned up and be like, jail's for people. So and then you gotta flip it on them.
Well, you clearly want to send somebody to jail. You were shouting about locking up George Santos just at the top of this call.
Yeah, because I want revenge. Like, I don't, I'm tired. Like, I don't want nobody who was stomping around and being cruel and not get their kind of cultural revenge. And you know, jail's the quickest way to say it, but, you know, that's not what's in my heart. I kind of just echo what DeRay said on this one, because the story gave me a lot of hope, because it shows that everybody is not just submitting to the wave of, like, fascism that we're seeing, you know? Just as much as it's disturbing that there's so many people inside of the system who are advancing it, it's also really, I don't know if warming is the right word, but we'll say it warms me to know that there are so many, that there are people who are saying no. Because you know what? And I also think that people are realizing that this type of weaponization of the court system can happen to everybody. And I think sometimes we just say that, but I think that now we're seeing that. I think that is how come Diddy didn't get the sentences that he wanted. I think so many people, because of our entertainment, because of just how the court systems are, realize that tomorrow it could be them, and they're way less quick to punish their fellow citizens.
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned, there's more to come. Pod Save the People is brought to you by Mint Mobile. You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. That's why people are making the switch to Mint Mobile. And with Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. Say bye-bye to the overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to the rescue. All the Mint Mobile plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. You can ditch the overpriced wireless and get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. If you want an easy cell phone provider with incredible coverage, it's Mint Mobile. That's why I know people that are switching over. It is affordable and it works. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/PSTP. That's mintmobile.com/PSTP. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Well, my news is about good old ICE, which continues to be a terror. And just a money-making operation too. So Alligator, Alcatraz, or whatever it's called, all the ICE officers. These people are making buku bank. The company that built Alligator Alcatraz, the private facilities that they have, is they care. I mean, they do care about deporting people because that is the project of white supremacy, to just have white people. But they also care about making money, and this is a money-making operation. So this, what I'm talking about is that ICE is going to shackle about 180,000 immigrants with GPS ankle monitors. Now, let me tell you, nobody is monitoring 180,000 people newly. It's not happening. There is no system to track that many people. We have no way, like, it's just, that's not happening. But what is happening is that the government will pay for more than 180,000 ankle monitors, and some company will make a ton of money with the monitors. What I also didn't know is that they have wrist-worn tracking devices, which are the exception for pregnant women. Obviously, I knew about ankle monitors, but wrist monitors feels just so crazy that I had to read the sentence a couple times to be like, what? I don't know. But yeah, somebody's making a lot of money. And that is, that's the thing. So as you can imagine, the group, Geo Group, which will get a lot of this, they donated over $1.5 million to Trump's presidential committee and the campaign and inaugural committee, and they will get the contract to do this. And it just is nuts. So I wanted to bring it because it just makes me super sad. And as you can imagine, Geo Group is ICE's largest contractor, and they, those people over there are getting rich off of the ICE business.
Yeah, it just made me think of like a modern Scarlet Letter, you know, just like the way that people will be branded when we see them wearing these ankle or wrist monitors. And, you know, when I first saw this story, I was like, let me just scroll down to the part where I figure out who's profiting from this, because I knew that was like a huge motivator here. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, you are, I know we don't care about this, but like, these things are heavy. You know what I mean? And you're going to put like these heavy things on people's bodies that they're going to have to wear for months and months at a time that are, to your point, not going to be effective. You know, all of that other stuff. And it's like, we just don't care about people's wellness, their well-being, their bodies, any of that. And I know that's like a random thing to care about, but I care about it, you know?
That's not random at all, because it's the kind of the day-to-day reminders of the domination that you're under that kind of eat away at the spirit and the psyche. So like the extra weight, you know, I can't even go to go in the shower or go to bed with like necklaces and stuff on. Mm-hmm. So I can only think about if you have something that was that is attached to your body because the state says they need to be able to track you. I can only imagine how uncomfortable it was. DeRay, I didn't know about wrist monitors because shout out to my, I'll keep her unnamed homegirl in Chicago who was pregnant when she got, she was pregnant and her ankles were swollen. So they were like, we got something for you, girl. Don't you worry. We will keep your ass in your apartment. So I was familiar with that. And I just think, you know, that again, like these like little stories, there's really not a whole lot to say that it just doesn't seem, that doesn't sound like something that we've already said before. But I think that in this moment, to look at how the lowest class is being treated lets us know the psyche of how we are all considered. So we are all considered cattle. We are all considered potential slaves. We are all considered potential convicts who this can happen to. All that the government needs is an excuse to do it. So I think that is the reason to care and to think about this, is because this is practice for the next group, and who knows who the next group is. Is the next group trans people? Is it Black? Is it other, Black Americans? Like, who knows who the next group is? And we have to look at it now and sit with it, and not just sit with it, but show compassion. And I don't know, like, maybe something's in my spirit, a little Nat Turner in my spirit, but I'm like, you know, how do we ain't got nobody to hack the, let me not talk about it. Let me.
Well, we invoked the spirit of Anonymous last week, so.
Okay, yeah. Ancestor Nat Turner and Anonymous, join. join, which puts us in my news, which is all about, hold on, that we might have got something with Dr. Dean. So my news is about Dr. Dean, and I think that we might need to call him up to make a little liberation plan. So if you do not know who Dr. Mark Dean is, I'm going to tell you, this article is from blackengineer.com. I'm also saying it because these are good sites that I like that have been good respites for me. So I'm like Black Enterprise, Black Engineer. I know I critique neoliberalism, but it is a warm blanket too. From part of this article, it says, Dr. Dean holds three of the original 9 patents on the computer that all PCs are based upon. And Dr. Mark Dean is a PhD from Stanford University. He's in the National Hall of Inventors. He has more than 30 patents pending. He's a vice president with IBM. And he's also the architect of the modern day personal computer. I did not know the modern day personal computer via IBM was built by a Black man. And I think about things like the cotton gin, and I think about things. I talked about Fairchild in the video games last year, and how some of the first video games were designed by a Black man. And I actually have a collection of his 80s video games. I don't have the console, but just the video games and stuff. And the reason why some of these people are really important to me, it kind of connects to my conversation that I had a couple of weeks ago with Saul Williams, is I think it's so important to use these stories to interject Black people inside of futurism, inside of a world where maybe nature and technology are one and Black people are safe inside of it. I think that we do a lot of fear-mongering, and we do a lot of and rightful warning about AI and the internet and et cetera. I don't think that we always do the best modeling of how technology can be just like nature and live with us and live with amongst us. And I think that these kind of stories are helpful to be like, no, this is not something that Steve Jobs did or Bill Gates only did or whoever just did. This is something that is a part of our kind of African and obviously Black American legacy. And this involves us, you know, and this is a part of this world of computers, this world of technology, and even this world of what I really want to call Afrofuturism should not exclude us. We should always be looking for excuses to interject us inside of those narratives, because that helps the imagination be able to see us there too.
Yeah, I was really appreciative of this article. You know, shared it with my 14-year-old niece.
Oh, good.
And just, you know, I think we talked about this also last week when we talked about Zora Neale Hurston, right, and the preservation of her home, is just the resisting of the erasure of us, our stories, and our contributions. So shout out to a July Black History Month, you know?
Okay.
I also think about what would the world be like if Mark Dean had just had a couple $100,000 just sitting around in legacy wealth to be able to do his own thing and not have to go work at IBM. Yeah. And shout out to Mark Dean for being in history. And, you know, Black History Month, let's round up some new people for February. You know?
Don't talk about Rosa.
Shout out to Rosa. We can keep the old people, but we got to add some new people to the carousel for Black History Month. So maybe that'll be Posse of the People's contribution. We'll do February ain't got 30 days in it. We'll do 28 days. That's what we're going to do, y'all. We're going to put out some people that y'all don't know for Black History Month, because this Black History Month in 2026 is 100 years of Black History Month. Ooh. So it is time to celebrate.
All right.
So yeah, let's do that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's 50 years. It was 50 years of Negro History Week, 50 years of Black History Month, but it is next year is the 100th of the celebrations. Well, that's it. Thanks so much for tuning in to Pod Save the People this week. And don't forget to follow us at Pod Save the People and Cricket Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you enjoyed this episode of Pod Save the People, consider dropping us a review on your favorite podcast app. And we will see you next week. Pod Save the People is a production of Cricket Media. It's produced by Adrian Moultrie and mixed by Charlotte Landis. Executive produced by me, and special thanks to our weekly contributors, Miles E. Johnson and Sharon DeBossier. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Bye.